Hi, everybody.
Happy Monday. Hi to Emily. Hi to Jennifer. Hi to Kristen.
Lindsay.
And hi to Lindsay.
All right. So Zen Talk number 14. Good to see you guys.
I think this is 15.
Or 15. I don't know.
Zen Talk something.
It's a Zen Talk. That's all I know. And so first of all, are we going to tell them about how we're going to change things a little bit?
We're going to try. Oh, yeah. Okay. So there's a few things that nothing is official. We haven't had the board meeting yet.
When's the board meeting?
I don't know.
Oh.
This is the board right here. But she's the CEO. As you'll find out on tomorrow's podcast.
Yeah.
We recorded tomorrow's podcast this morning. And we had a little discussion because some guy thinks that you are demeaning to me.
Yeah. Somebody who listens to the show emailed me and told me that I need to let Todd talk more.
The problem is sometimes when I disagree
with him that I'm demeaning him.
The problem is sometimes there's nothing going on up here. So I have nothing to say.
Well, and I'm not laughing at the man who emailed me because he actually wasn't mean. He said, Kathy, you're very knowledgeable. Good for you. Pat on the back. He said, but.
But he said he's going to stop listening.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, at the end.
Oh, then he's not going to listen to what I said.
No.
Aw, I demeaned too much.
You're a demeanor.
I'm a demeanor.
You demean.
And I think what he was trying to say was, Kathy, you have an opinion. And I think that's
what. Shame on you, woman. Opinions. Opinions are for the men.
And if you have something to say, I have to say yes.
Yes.
Everything you say is right.
Isn't Todd great?
Did you guys all hear what Todd just said? That was so much better than what I said. and at the same time, there's a balance. Todd says amazing things, and I want to make sure that everybody always hears what Todd says that's amazing, but it doesn't mean I don't have something to say too. So hear me roar.
So regarding Zen Talk, we're thinking about maybe opening it up to maybe slightly longer but less frequent. So mm-hmm. instead of three a month, two a month, because some people have said, I can't keep up.
Yeah.
So that's like nothing is official, but we think we might bring it down to at least two a month.
So it'd be every other week because the emails that we're getting and people are saying, I can't keep up. They're all backlogged and we're fine with three. It's not like we don't have the time, but we'd rather make it more efficient for people rather than have people think, because we're getting a lot of emails like, oh, people are feeling like they're not part of the team because they're not always here. And so I'd rather make it like really good, you know, for an hour, and maybe not everyone can stay for the full hour, but make it really good for that hour. And then make sure I'm on the Facebook page as much as I can be to answer questions and make it just more efficient. So it's not about making it less, but making it more efficient.
Well, and more predictable.
More predictable,
you know,
yeah.
Because three times a month is kind of, and there's four podcasts
yeah.
that we do. So anyways,
okay.
I am working towards maybe, right now Kathy sends an email out with a link and I'm part of something called Podcaster Society. And I just found out about this because he does like something we do. He does these webinars. We call them Zen Talks. And he has it set up so you can actually listen to his webinars within the podcast app of the phone.
So it becomes like a special subscription for you guys where it becomes a podcast rather than having to click on a link.
Right.
And now that for some of you may be like, that's not going to change the way I listen to it, but it will make it more efficient. It'll be more like a subscription service, and then you'll get the link. You click on it. It goes straight to your podcast app, so you can listen to it, fast forward it, just like you would any other podcast.
Right. Basically, it's a secret podcast
within your app.
That nobody else will know about.
You have something special.
For me, that is, like, I don't like emails. I don't like clicking on emails. I don't like streaming. I like my podcast app.
Yeah.
So that is a work in progress, but that's what we're working on.
So we're just trying to get better, and your feedback is great. You know, don't feel like you have to, I mean, I appreciate it when you're like, it's great, I love it. But you can also say, this would be more efficient. We may or may not be able to do it, but we're trying to make this really good.
Yeah.
So we can be helpful and thoughtful and not take up too much of your time, but offer you enough that it's worth what you're paying.
Yeah.
So it's like there's finding that sweet spot. So
talk about good and bad.
Okay, so just a real quick, like, you know, entry. We've got some questions, but we didn't get to this on today's show, so I thought I would share this. So I was with my girlfriends this weekend from college, and we were having talks about certain things, and I was finding that my friends that I was with, they were really kind of talking about people. Well, I'll talk about one of my girlfriends who just broke up with her boyfriend, and she was saying, he's not that great of a guy. Here's the things he did. He was kind of emotionally abusive. That's the language I would use. But she's like, well, we'd have so much fun. And he's so great. And so is he good or is he bad? And I'm like, well, he's both, just like everybody is. And you have to decide, do you want to be in a relationship with somebody who has both of these things, like all we do, all of us do, but which one is outweighing the other? Okay? Because a lot of times what we do with people is we look at them and we put them in a box. It's actually, it's a clinical word called splitting. With something called borderline personality disorder, how you know someone has borderline personality disorder, is they split everything. Everything's either good or bad. You're either on their side or you're not. You're either with them or you're not. And so you can always kind of, as a therapist, you can always tell if that's kind of in the room as far as how they split things. Not just people, but anything. This was a good experience, this is a bad. They can't see gray. And the truth is, in all situations, because borderline personality is actually, you know, it's a diagnosis. It's not something it's not that common. But we all have a little bit of that where we decide someone's good or bad. And instead, we can recognize their humanity. Like Todd struggles with this. We used to talk about this with like Martin Luther King. Okay, Martin Luther King changed the world, correct? Changed the country, led the civil rights movement. He was unfaithful to his wife.
Bummer. God, bummer.
So do we throw out everything Martin Luther King did and say, well, he didn't, you know, live up to what I perceive to be a man of integrity to be? Or do we say, yes, this part sucks and we're not going to not acknowledge it? I mean, his wife even talks about it now, or, you know, not his wife, his children even talk about it now. It's something that that people know, but does then that make everything he did bad and wrong? You know, people talk about that with Gandhi, with his culture and the way he treated children and some issues that I don't even fully understand. People sometimes associate with pedophilia and stuff like that.
There's
issues
some,
in the culture.
Weird Indian culture thing.
That has to do with children. So they're like, therefore, everything he did doesn't mean anything. And that's not true. He did amazing things. And he learned what he's the one who taught Martin Luther King what peaceful protest was. Mm-hmm. So we can't throw, it's kind of like throwing out the baby with the bathwater. Now, with all that said, that's the balance is like, do we not listen to what Gandhi has to say or Martin Luther King has to say because of those things? We got to weigh the good with the bad and what's human and what can we better understand based on culture, or what can we better understand based on the times or their humanity or their marriage. And like with my girlfriend, I think in her situation, and this is just my opinion, but I think the bad outweighed, meaning she didn't feel safe, all those kind of things, but it doesn't mean they didn't have a good time. She doesn't have to look back and be like, well, then that time I was having a good time, I must not have been having a good time. You were, that was a good moment. But to decide to dedicate your life to this man may not be the best choice. So this is a very hard thing for people, because people like to just know good, bad. You're either good or you're bad. You're either on my side or you're not.
And that's the way our brain is hardwired, is to discriminate, to make judgments, to the ego, the reptilian likes black and white.
Correct. And you can still make a choice to, like, if there's someone who's harming you, it doesn't mean you have to like be like, oh, I'm going to keep them in my life because I see they're good too. You can decide I'm not going to be with this person or spend time with them or invite them over for dinner. But you can still say, yeah, that time that he or she made me laugh, they really made me laugh. And they do have a good sense of humor, but the harm outweighs the good.
Hey, I have a wonderful example.
Let's hear it.
My dad.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Do you wish your dad was on the Zoom talk with us?
I'm glad my dad's not on
the Zoom. He would love this.
My dad is sometimes mean, cruel, unkind, ignorant, says the wrong things, knowing that he's hurting people. While at the same time, I just found out like in the last 6 months through discussion between me, my dad, and you, that he loves to make people laugh.
Right. We told that story. We talked about how he wanted to be a comedian.
He wanted to be a comedian. I never knew that. But anyways, so he's doing most of these things with the intent to connect with people. The way he connects with people is by making jokes. His problem is most of the time the jokes aren't funny and usually at somebody's expense. So I'm like, so it's like, you know, what a jerk. But at the same time, his intention is to connect, even though he's going the wrong way. And by the way, he had a crappy childhood. He had no father. He had a mom who committed suicide when he was 18 years old. He had no role models. And somehow he managed to raise three awesome children.
Mm-hmm. They're all three.
So is my dad good or bad?
Well, it depends. That's where we get into mindfulness. It's the moment. And it's also a decision of sometimes a wisdom decision on is you know, my friend, she has a choice of who she's going to partner with. So does she want to bring this man into her life and her family and her children's life? Your dad is your dad. So we're going to figure out a way, as we always do every time we're with him, to see the best and to pull out the good and to appreciate the good. He also has a really big heart and loves a lot of people. He just doesn't know how to love them very well. And he's got a big heart. But his heart's been hurt so much that he is kind of mean. So you see what I mean? So
it's
messy. It's messy. Messy math.
I hate messy. It's so messy.
So messy. But this is what self-awareness is you want to be thoughtful whenever you're splitting. You know, you can use that word, like I'm splitting right now. I'm making somebody all good or all bad. Within that choice, though, you can decide how you want to interact with that person. Doesn't mean that you have to be their best friend. You can totally be like, I'm not going to spend time with that person. Or, yeah, I had a good meal at that restaurant once, but 10 times I got food poisoning. You don't have to say, well, since I had a good meal once, I'll just keep going back. You can choose to not go anymore.
I think if you go to a restaurant and get food poisoning 10 times, you got some issues.
Well,
I thought you were going to say the other thing. Like 10 times you got good food.
Yeah, let's do it that way.
One time you got food poisoning.
Right. That's a better one.
That's what I'm talking about.
So anyway, I just want to talk about that on the show today just because I think sometimes we struggle as if we have to make it all line up perfectly, and it doesn't.
Never. And sometimes it does, but most of the time it doesn't. All right, we ready to move on?
I'm ready.
So I'm going to unmute Kristen, and I'm going to ask her a few questions because she has a question. Kristen, okay. Are you there?
Yep, I'm here. Hi, Kristen.
Where do you live?
Hi. I'm in Littleton, Colorado.
And Littleton. I know where that is. Is there anything, this is in regards to your question, is there anything in Littleton that you wish you had that you don't have?
Yeah, I just don't have a really great group of friends that we can talk about deep, meaningful things. It's just very surfacey and, you know, how are you? How's the kids? You know, just, I don't know. I have lots of women in my life, but just, I've got lots of great friends scattered throughout the country, but just not any great ones here. And so I'm looking to form those friendships, and I'm looking for them, and I'm seeking for them, and I'm making room for them in my life, but it just doesn't seem to happen. And the women that I'm hanging around are good people. It's just, we just can't seem to get past that surface talk.
How many kids do you have?
Three.
And how old are they?
2, 5, and 7.
2, 5, and 7. So I
and they're all girls.
Oh, three girls. That's awesome.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all girls.
So
yeah.
Like that.
We spent the first 5 years of JC's life, you know, your world gets smaller. And then as your kids grow older, it's easier to meet more people for us. So that's the one thing. So I think your world will get a little bit bigger as your kids get older. So you have more people kind of to choose from. And I will also say that
I'm going to put it underneath this while you're talking.
That it's exhausting to have continuous shallow conversations, especially for you, sweetie. You don't like to have shallow conversations.
I will actually like avoid them. Like I would rather go, you know, like when you have to go stand in front of the school to pick up your kids or whatever. I mean, I'll say hi to people. It's not like I'm like on my phone or anything, but I'm not interested. You know, when there's like a group of 10 people standing around and they're all like, oh, and then what class? And then blah, blah, blah. I will go sit on a bench. I just have, and I love them all. It's not, again, I'm not splitting. I'm not saying those people, there's something wrong with them and I'm better. It's, I don't want to participate in that.
So here's my quick story. I used to belong to a group called Indian Princess, and it's when, it's daddies and daughters, and we would go camping for a weekend, and I would get frustrated because these guys were acquaintances. They weren't my friends. And I used to get really frustrated because the amount of BS talk about sports and drinking and the good old days, and there was no authentic conversations. And I got frustrated for a few years, and then I kind of just decided that I was going to become vulnerable and kind of show my cards and share kind of more authentic, vulnerable things. And it was surprising how quickly guys kind of met me where I was at. So, and maybe Kristen, you're already doing this, but if you want something to happen, something's got to change. And sometimes we're like waiting for somebody else to kind of share that vulnerable experience. And sometimes it's got to be us.
Yeah.
You with me? So real quick, I just unmuted you. Are you doing that and it's not being met, or are you kind of scared to do it?
No, I'm doing it and it's not being met.
Interesting.
So yeah. What do you know?
Well, here's what I would say. I had the same experience you did. Like Todd said, we, you know, when my kids were really little, it was hard to kind of put everything together, but I definitely missed the kind of conversation that I would have with my college friends or my girlfriends from high school. And like you, they were all over the place, right? And I was like, okay, there's gotta be people in this town that think similar to me. And we don't have to agree on everything, but they have to be, if I'm missing this kind of connection, I know there's gotta be other women who are too. So, and you probably know what I'm gonna say, but that's why I started Women's Circle. And I know from your email, you're like, you know, it's a lot to be like, okay, I'm gonna start this and I'm gonna run this. The thing that's interesting about Circle is you're not really running it, you're facilitating it. I mean, I do some teaching sometimes because that's my job, you know, but if you were to say, and you don't even have to do it, like, you can call it whatever you want. It doesn't matter what the word is. You can call it Women's Circle, you can call it book club, you can call it, you know, it doesn't matter. A night to get together, come over and have a glass of wine. And then if you do, like, say it's a book club, because sometimes that's an easy way to start, choose a book that's deep. You know, choose, and, you know, like, I remember the first one we did was Anatomy of the Spirit by Carolyn Mace. Do you know that one? Okay, good. You know that one. So that really got people talking, you know, like, wow, or I didn't look at it this way, or, oh, you know, how that affects my body and the experiences I've had, and, you know, just talking about chakras.
Right.
And that takes everything to a different level. And what I will tell you, Kristen, is that I've been doing Women's Circle now for like 6 years, 7 years, and women leave. It's not for everyone.
Right.
So if you start and you're like, oh, this woman left, or I only got three people, or I only got two, or got four, same.
Right.
You know, like, now there's a consistency because these women have been found over time, and they come and go. Like, I actually just ran into a woman this morning at yoga who hasn't been at Circle for a year and a half. And she's like, you don't email me anymore. I want to come back. And when she left, things were going on in her life that didn't allow her to be a part of it. But now she wants back. So I only tell you that because I think sometimes we can think if a few people aren't initially interested, then it's not a good idea. And you have to know, and I'll just tell you, I will just like be your good friend and sit next to you and say, there are women who want what you have.
Yes.
But you've got to find them. And when five women say no and one woman says yes, go with the one woman and continue. Do you see what I mean? Don't say, oh, you know what? This wasn't a good idea, because I can guarantee it is. And you may, with the first couple women, you may just end up going to coffee with two or three women and say, you know what? I want to talk about, you know, this book or this podcast or this, you know, use Zen parenting, you know, I want to talk about this show because I don't agree with this, or I agree with this. And then see what happens. Instead of saying, I want it to look like this, I want it to be like this, it's like, just kind of like Todd said, jump in somewhere. And then when there's a pushback or people drop off, call us again. And we'll be like, yep, that's going to happen. Or it may not. I mean, it may not.
I've been doing my tribe men's group for, I don't know, about 5 years. And it started with me and my buddy and I think two other guys. And now we have about 60 men on the list. But even though I've been doing it 5 years, like, I think our last meeting was six guys.
Yeah.
And then next month it might be
30,
22. So it's not about, try to forget about the outcome or what a women's circle is supposed to look like and just start baby stepping your way into it and just keep putting yourself out there.
Yeah, it's fluid. And I'll email you some things. I want to remember, make a note to email Kristen, like, there's cards you can use, like, where, you know, to start a conversation, like Danielle Laporte has cards, you know what I'm talking about, like spirit cards, angel cards, you know, animal spirit cards, and everyone picks one, and then everyone just reads what they have and starts talking about it. Like, so that's what I mean to you, like, don't feel like you have to be a therapist or have to be like the teacher, just facilitate, like, you throw the party. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm taking you off mute. So how does that
feel? I like the idea of the cards. It sounds like just a good way to start talking, and that I don't have to be the leader or the facilitator because I am not a teacher.
Yes.
Or a therapist.
Or yes. And yeah. You are in your own way, but I know what you
yes.
mean. You don't
right.
want to, you don't want to come off as being like, I'm going to teach all of you something.
You're right.
Going to bring
no.
together, and we're
right.
going to do this. And that's what's so great. But with that said, there always has to be like a quarterback who
right.
uses it. And that's you. Yep.
I'm willing to do that. I just, yeah, I like the card idea. I'll try that.
Yeah, that's great. And then you just posted.
She's in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Like, oh.
That's the thing is I don't have a ton of friends in Littleton, but I know where that is. And mm-hmm. there are so many open-minded people in that area. There might be a lot of closed-minded too.
Right.
And sure. Yeah. You know, I'm trying not to split.
Right.
There are definitely women who want what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I'm going to move away.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm going to move over to Emily. Emily, you ready?
Yes.
All right. What do you got?
Hi.
Hi.
First, thank you guys so much. I love your podcast. I actually stumbled upon you guys when my husband and I were going through a little bit of a rough time right after our first son was born in January. And actually, Kathy, I was the one that commented on the Instagram post letting you know that my husband and I do the da-da-da-da. Here we go.
That made me laugh. So,
love you guys. And my husband and I are both avid listeners. But I was calling, my question is actually regards to in-laws. Okay. My husband and I were raised very differently. We both have such a solid understanding of that. I was raised in a Catholic household, but very, very liberal, very, you know, progressive. My husband was raised in a conservative Christian household in Texas. And although those differences they almost haven't really come to play until now, until our son is here and grandparents, you know, want to have a more pivotal role in our life. Totally understandable. Although what's happening is that I have definitely put up some boundaries with some of the things that his parents have wanted to do. Wanted to come move here, looked at houses without me knowing. And to say that we're not close would be an understatement. And I have this fear, and I know it was real or imagined. I had this fear that they were going to move here and like take my son away from me. I had really intense anxiety. It's caused, as you can imagine, a lot of stress in our marriage. And now this conflict has kind of eroded into something just between my husband and I. It's almost the conflict started with his parents, but now it's like him and I are just at odds. And I know that the underlying issue is this need to somehow come to a place where we both feel okay with whatever role his parents play. And we're struggling to get there. So that was a mouthful, but just, you know, open to hear what you guys have to say.
No, I'm glad you told us the whole story.
Yeah,
so thank you for sharing.
So my quick take is
we never had any issues like this, did we? We did.
We had these.
We were late.
Step one is to get on the same page with your husband. And it sounds like that's
problem. The
question, like that's not working. How do you do that? I don't know. There's a part of me, this isn't gonna help, but this is what's coming to me. When you get married, I got stuck with this too. I remember Kathy and I had a pretty significant disagreement. This is before we were married, but it was about your college graduation.
Right? My master's program.
Right. And my cousin was also graduating on the same weekend. And I had a hard time deciding if I wanted to go to her graduation, even though none of her birth family would be able to show up because her dad was sick in the hospital.
Yeah, my dad's in the hospital. My mom's with him. My sister couldn't come. So I'm going to graduate with my master's by myself. I assumed he was coming.
Right.
I was like giving him the information. Like, you know, my graduation, he's like, I might not be able to make it.
And I had this demented loyalty towards my birth family, my mom. And I didn't, basically what it was, is I didn't want to disappoint my mom.
Yeah.
Because my mom brought me up to say, you know, this family is all we got. All the while, I was creating a new family with Kathy, and I didn't realize the gravity of what that meant. So when I decided to marry Kathy, and this has taken years for me to realize this, but the world is big enough for everybody to get along. But if I have to make a decision between this or that, it's with Kathy. And it took me a long time to realize. So I guess my first thing is, you got to be patient with your husband, but at the same time, if this isn't working, nothing is working.
Works.
So in other words, if he decides to, fall on the side of the argument of his birth family against his wife, that is going to be a recipe for some significant challenges.
Because, Emily, then that set, and again, it's like maybe you'll share this podcast or this cast with him, because then it, puts you against them.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a difficult relationship. It pits them against you because they're going to know that you didn't agree and that they feel like he's on their side and that you're wrong. And it just, all the dynamics get messed up. Because the thing is that when Todd says that he's going to start a family with me, I want to be really clear. That's how it's supposed to be.
Yes.
It's not you choosing who you love more. It's not your husband saying, oh, mom and dad, now I don't appreciate you. It's just about Emily. It's about the natural progression of life, which is the whole point of our birth family is to raise us so we can go to a place where we can create a family and continue on. Now, the beautiful part is, as Todd said, there's room enough for everybody. So you don't let go of your biological family and say, sorry, see ya. You just, they take on a different role in your life. No more, they're not raising you anymore. You're not needing to please them and make sure that they're doing what what they tell you to do. You are then living your life and hoping to support them and have more of a peer relationship. You know, like I say, peer relationship, like there is, the hierarchy is not there anymore. You're not the child. You are their child by birth, but you're not a kid. And that you have more of a peer relationship. Now, and again, like I said, we're kind of joking. We had this experience with that, but with your mom a lot.
Yep.
His mom passed away, as you guys know, and she and I ended up having an amazing relationship. And I still talk to my mother-in-law all the time in the air. I smell her around me. I smell her perfume all the time. But there was a time she called me and said she didn't want me to marry Todd.
Minor setbacks.
So these are things. So I said this on the show today. Sometimes people will like email us or call us and be like, well, you guys have it easy because you get along and you've never had issues. I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, we have had to work through some really serious family things on both sides, you know, and
so a little more serious on my side.
A little more serious.
Let's call it for what it is.
But my family, it maybe didn't have those kind of issues, but my dad was sick from the day we got together. Like, I've had more issues with caretaking of my parents, and he's had more issues with emotional instability. but those are challenges, right? My point is that I'm setting that up for you as the grounding force. So that's really where your husband and you, and I know he's not going to be there automatically just because Kathy and Todd say this, but that's how it's supposed to be. So it's you two as a family and you two making choices together that work for both of you. And then it is acknowledging and respecting and honoring who they are within that family. Because again, I keep saying this, but I'm beating this to death so you guys see, you're not going to split and say, we're completely right, they're always wrong. Because they're not. They love you. They want to be a part of your life. And even though the relationship may not be great, you know, like it might be a little tense and they may not be self-aware at all, you are going to be compassionate to them. Because you're the one who gets it.
And that's the trick. Because
that's a trick.
Up until you just said that, I'd be like, this is all great to dialogue, but that doesn't help her for where she is. The trick is to set these boundaries, but at the same time, be compassionate and loving towards your husband and your husband's family who have this different ideas.
Maybe entitlement.
Yeah.
You know, like entitlement that it should be about them because they haven't let go of the role of parent yet, Emily, and they never will. So if you understand that about them, then because like Todd with his mom, it hurt at the time because I was only, 27 years old. So that's kind of a hard thing to hear from your husband or your almost husband's mom. But I understood that he was her caretaker emotionally. And if I came into the picture, then he wouldn't take care of her the way that he had. Like, she depended on him. And she was even married to a wonderful man at the time. She had married another person, his stepfather, who we loved. But Todd was her rock. You know what I mean? Well, and when I came into the mix, I messed it up.
And what's weird, and I know this doesn't make any sense, but for some reason, it was easier for me to keep my mom happy than you happy. And that's what we're talking about. You got to switch that. You got to start with your wife. And then if your mom or your dad or whoever has a problem with you, then that's where the work is going to be.
But why? And when I'm asking this question, there's a good reason. You know why. Why is it easier to please your mom than me? Who did you have more practice with?
With her.
Right.
Right.
So that's a pattern.
Yeah.
Your husband knows how to keep his parents happy, and he does that because he doesn't want to feel the discomfort and upheaval. Because inside your husband is a little boy, every age he's ever been, just like me, just like it's not just your husband. When he hears his mom say, I want to be by you, or I need you, or I want to be next to the grandkids, or listen to me, or what about me? He goes into child. He's like, oh my God, my mom. Mm-hmm. He loves his mom. Even if she's a pain sometimes, it's his mom. And so he's like, and that's uncomfortable.
And it's stuck. He's stuck in the middle.
He's stuck.
And that's the other thing. Maybe if you can't pull from some compassion or empathy in the moment, just know as a guy, or in my situation, it was really hard because I wanted to love her, but I wanted to love my mom, and I wanted
not disappoint.
And I'm stuck in the middle, and that sucks.
Right.
And you kind of have to, there comes a time in a husband's life where you just kind of have to decide who you with. Who are you with?
Right.
And I'm with her. I love my mom. I love her. But I'm with her.
And the thing is if he's with me, then he can better be with her. Yeah. Do you see what I mean? It's not a choice of her, not you. It's the way we are going to be a healthy family, mom and dad, is if I choose my wife and my children, then I can have respect and honor for you in this new position of not someone who's, you know, in a teaching role with me anymore, but like more like a flat hierarchy of we're all in this together and we're a family, all of us. But if I choose you, then I'm still doing what I did 10 years ago. And I can't maintain this marriage.
Is this called triangulation?
Oh, it can be. There's a piece of triangulation to it, but that's usually in it. That's usually in the actual, you know, it, when he was in his birth family and living with them, there could have been more triangulation, but it's an offshoot of that. But that's a.
All right. So I'm going to unmute you.
So Emily, what do you think?
I think that was very helpful, and I appreciate, I think always what I love about you guys that you draw on from your own experiences, and you know, talking about that example of the missing of the, you know, the graduation, we had some of those instances, and I definitely agree that, you know, a male's relationship with their mother and is different. He has a lot of things in his past, or I feel like he feels a little indebted to his parents. So that's coming into play a little bit more. But I think for us too, we had to both get to a realization that we were both raised so, so differently, like culturally so differently. And even though those experiences have made us a truly, you know, great match, but in terms of bringing in the individuals that help shape our culture, there's a mismatch there. So your advice is always very well received, and he always watches the video, so you know he'll be happy to hear me on here asking questions.
Name?
So,
what's his
Carl?
Name? Hi, Carl.
Carl, we love you. Yeah. You're doing great.
You're not alone. What your experience is very similar to.
I did a men's group one time in this living room that we're in right now, and I titled it "Figuring Out What It Is, Figuring Out How Women Think." And it was a very curious topic. So it was the only time I've ever invited Kathy into the men's group. And the idea was for her to be in it for 10 or 15 minutes and then she'd leave. But these guys kept asking her questions. And this happened a few years ago. But what I remember more than anything else, learning from my wife in that men's group, was what women want more than anything is for us to have their back. So Carl, this is what Emily wants. Just have her back. And that doesn't mean at the expense of your love for your mom, but.
And it doesn't mean you give in all the time, or that you're being permissive, or that Emily's always right. This is not a woman's always right thing. This is, she just wants to know that you hear her. She just wants to, you can still be like, but my family and I owe them. And absolutely. And I think Emily will totally understand that. But at the same time, you understand the challenges she's facing with the difference in the family culture, and that she wants to feel like she is the most important, and that your family is the number one concern, and that if that is honored, then it will be so much easier to love your parents. And then Emily is given the opportunity to love your parents without feeling like she has to fight them.
Well, and one last thing before we go to Jennifer, because I think Jennifer is going to add
something
to
good.
This. Kathy mentioned it, but you know, we're a bunch of grown-ups, we're a bunch of little kids in grown-ups' bodies.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, as a 40-year-old man or a 35-year-old man, I didn't want to get in trouble from my mom.
I know.
Like, that's as weird as it sounds, as a grown man, to not want to get in trouble from my mom, that's why I struggled with it.
There was a show that we did a while ago where Dr. Duffy, John Duffy, our good friend, was on, and he brought up something about smoking and about how when I was in high school and college, I would smoke, and I stopped the show. And I was like, stop, 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 stop. And he's like, what? And I go, I don't want that on the podcast, because my mom and my dad was alive at the time. My parents listened to this. And he's like, okay, Kathy, you talk about everything.
Right.
Every part of your emotional life, and you don't want your parents to know that, as if they didn't, like as if it was some kind of... But that's how ingrained, like that was just, it was a very funny moment for all of us, because I literally stopped the taping.
Yes, you did. I did. Jennifer, how are you?
Hi, good. I feel like I'm the female equivalent of Todd, because every time I'm on one of these talks, I have not showered. So I like try to throw on a baseball cap and like hide myself. And then I realized that my little camera has like some kind of film over it, so it looks like I'm filtering myself, but I don't intend to do that, but I kind of do because I haven't showered. So anyway, that's my funny I'm like Todd story. So I was gonna respond actually to both Kristen and Emily and tell Kristen that I have a very similar situation here, and I haven't figured it out either, but that I will keep you in mind so that if I do figure it out, because I believe in what Kathy says, that there are plenty of people around here who believe in the same thing. And it's just a matter of making yourself vulnerable and finding them. I thought that Brené Brown's new book might be a good place for me to start, because I know another mom who is a big Brené Brown fan. So I told her she had a new book. And so it's just the two of us right now, but we're going to start a book club. So I'll let you know how my experience goes with that. and then Emily, I wanted to mention, I have this struggle with my husband all the time, because he comes from a very big Italian family, also very Catholic. And I saw this article recently, and it's by a guy named Matthew Frey. And he writes on this website called mustbethistalltoride.com. And Todd, I think you would really like it. I think this article was posted on another website, but it was basically all about how in a successful marriage, you have to prioritize your spouse over everything. And the kind of the conflict I think my husband and I have been having lately is he definitely prioritizes his family, even though he doesn't intend to. It's almost like a conditioned response, like what he's always done. So he has to almost start practicing how not to do it. And for me, in admitting my issues, I tend to prioritize my kids over my husband.
Interesting.
They've got a lot of stuff going on, you know, whether it's health-wise, emotional-wise, school-wise, sports-wise, whatever. And my mentality was always, well, they're kids. Of course, like I need to take care of them first. But kind of what I realized from this article is that obviously, you know, at the end of the day, my kids need to be fed and clothed and alive. But really that every single day I need to start making time to prioritize my husband. And so we both have an issue. He prioritizes his family. I prioritize the kid. But what I really liked about this article was that it really lays out how so many of us do prioritize our family of origin. And so we had an example recently where we had this conflict, and he's one of five siblings, and there's like tons of aunts and uncles. Like, I don't even know all his family members, and we've been together for like 25 years. And we had this conflict. There was a death in the family, and we were trying to decide whether to reach out to somebody who was on a cruise in Alaska. And I'd been doing all the legwork with communicating. We had to take somebody, a cousin, off of life support. So I had kind of been in like the communicator. And so Vinny and I were talking about it, and I talked to this mom, and we decided we wouldn't tell this other sibling who was on this cruise in Alaska, because nothing was going to happen until they came home. Long story short, another brother decided differently and went ahead and called the brother. And it upset me so much, not so much that Lou did that, but that my husband didn't go back at him and say, wow, are you kidding me? After my wife did all this, you went ahead and did that regardless of her feelings. Like, I just wanted him to have my back, and I wanted him to have my back in a very vocal way that said, hey, listen, you hurt my wife and that's not okay. So it was really, really stressful because I was in a lot of pain about it. I mean, I was really, really upset. And so anyway, this article came along a few days after that, and I shared it with my husband, and it was kind of a starting point for us to really establish the intention that in everything we do, we start with what matters to us as a couple. So I just want to throw that out there because it was such a similar story, and this article really helped us kind of come together and do it in a much more intentional way. Instead of just talking about it and saying, oh yeah, of course we have to prioritize each other, really trying to make decisions every single day that says we prioritize each other above all else. So I just wanted to mention that.
I just muted you, Jennifer. So I love what you just said. The one thing I want to say to Emily, and I guess Carl, if he's listening, is one thing is, Emily, one thing I love what Jennifer said more than anything was that she realized her role in it, that she prioritized her kids first and then her husband second. And if there's anything, I don't know if that's in your situation, Emily, or not, but figure out how it is that you can make things better and share with him your own shortcomings first to kind of, because then that'll give Carl the ability to drop his shield a little bit or take off his mask or not dig his heels in so significantly. Because if you just start out with, you need to change, that's really hard to hear to anybody, whether it's a man or a woman.
So the language that I would use is, I'm going to take responsibility for my part, and here's my part. And maybe my part is, you know, I'm prioritizing, you know, our kid or a little bit, or I'm a little too harsh about your parents, or I'm asking you to do something that's hard for me too. Or, you know, it's not about throwing yourself under the bus or being self-depreciating. It's just about really getting deep and be like, what has my role been in this? Have I been easy to work with, or have I not? Even if you're 100% right on, meaning that you're the one saying prioritize our marriage, so your end result is where you want to get, but how are we doing it is always the question. Like, I can think about any conversation that Todd and I have had, and there's been times I've wanted to win. And even though I might have the right answer, I didn't go about it the best way. I can say that with my kids too. I may have been right, they may have been wrong, but I could have done it differently. And that is, like Todd said, owning that is a big deal. And one more thing I want to say, Emily, before we go to you again, is that to Jennifer's point, it reminded me of a time, because Todd, like Todd said, Todd's dad and I get along pretty well now. Like, we have we always have. He when he gets too close to me, he gets uncomfortable, so he decides to be mean to me. It's his way of, like, not getting too vulnerable. As soon as we get close and everything's good, he's like, "Argh." So one time he was not very nice to me, and it was pretty blatant. Like, I was like, whoa. And I kind of have a sense of humor about it now where I don't. But what Todd figured out, this was years ago at that game, Todd figured out if he could say to his dad,
"This is good."
He called his dad, and his dad said, "Kathy's too sensitive."
My old pattern would have been, "Dad, you have to do that because that's not nice to Kathy." It would have gone right over his head.
And he would make an excuse. He would say, "Kathy's too sensitive."
So Kathy helped me to flip that. And what I said is, "Dad, you are affecting me. This is not about Kathy. It hurts my heart when you're unkind towards my wife."
Yes.
And that was
a shift.
A shift for him to say, oh, because he loves me more than he loves Kathy, because Kathy's just some lady. I'm his son. So the minute that I shifted it off of Kathy and onto me, that gave me the ammunition, the power, the leverage, the influence to modify my dad's behavior, which is not an easy thing to do.
And it was dual purpose, because he was able to reach his father where he could hear him, and it also demonstrated he had my back. Mm-hmm. Because he said, "When you hurt my wife, it hurts me." Yeah. We are part of the same unit. So we are not one person, but we are part of the same unit. And so watching you be disrespectful to my wife, it hurts my heart. So it's like dual purpose. So I'll go back to you, Emily, Anything else about that?
Just to a big thank you to both of you and to Jennifer. Jennifer, I messaged you. I tried to find that article, but it didn't come up through a quick Google search. So, I'd love to see it. But thank you. I think all of this very good advice, and I'm sure that Carl and I will watch this later tonight. thank you.
Hey, Jennifer, can you put it in the chat so we can put it in the notes? If you can find the link and just put it in there.
Yeah, and then we'll put it in the notes so you'll get it, Emily.
Thank you.
I have another question. There's a lady named Dawn who's part of Zen Talk. I don't think she's on right now. If you are, I apologize. I shared that video where they talk about how the news and the media kind of brainwashes you into thinking.
Yeah, he put it on our main Facebook page. Would you put it on our main one or the Zen?
I think I did both.
Okay. So it's just about how the news brainwashes us to think negatively.
So Dawn says, I don't watch the news for all the reasons stated in this video, but do receive comments from loved ones like, you should know what's going on in the world, and I'm not sure how to respond to that. I didn't know about Harvey until after it happened and have family in Texas. Turns out some of them were significantly affected, as I found out when I texted to see if they were okay. I was kind of in shock and felt pretty awful that I didn't know. I knew about the hurricane and had heard that it was bad, and I chalked it up to the same old with the love of bad news in the news cycle. I think I was almost a week late even making an inquiry to my beloved cousin. I felt so bad. So my first response is, if you feel like you did something wrong, don't beat yourself up too bad, because it's not helpful. So,
and you can make amends for it.
One thing, I love giving practical advice. So this is my routine. There is a website called The Skim. I think it's called Skim or The Skim. Mm-hmm. And it's a really brief overview of what's going on in the world. And they have, and it's unbiased, it's not left, it's not right, it's just the facts.
And delicately written.
Delicately written
with fear.
And I think it's written by women too, which is good. And so that's helpful. And it's free, you subscribe to it, no problem. And the other is, there's a podcast called Up First. It's an NPR podcast. It's about 11 minutes long every weekday morning. And I listen on 1.5 speed because it's not deep. It's just an awareness. So that is my practical solution. Up First, NPR podcast. It's 11 minutes long. And The Skim. Those are my two ways. And then other than that, like, we don't watch CNN. We don't watch them. We don't watch anything. Like, it's not on the TV. That's how I inform myself, because I don't want to get caught in a situation where I'm with a coworker and they say, what do you think about Harvey? And I don't have a clue what they're talking about. I need to be a little bit informed. That's me.
Yeah. And so do I, not necessarily because I feel like I need to be for other people. Like Todd's I think you guys know this, but he has another full-time job besides this, where he's a salesman and he has to go travel and be with people. So that is important to his work. I don't necessarily feel like I do, because on the show, we do have to talk about what's going on in the world. Like, and regardless of why I think I have to, I want to. I am someone who, the way I get the news is oftentimes when I go onto Facebook, I notice what's trending, and I see those stories, and usually it's pretty easy to click on and recognize which stories are blown up and fear-inducing and which are just factual. I also have, because I love Dan Rather, I like his News and Guts page. Sometimes he puts stories that are a little bit, I don't think it's a perfect place. But I kind of feel like if it's on News and Guts, then it's a thing that has been, and that's a Facebook page, just so you guys know what I'm talking about. It's something that has been reported in the news over and over and over again. That's a real thing, rather than this mass of stories that I just can't keep up with. I also, after the election, I chose to subscribe to the Washington Post and the New York Times because I wanted to support our journalists. So I occasionally get an email from them that says, here's the stories of the day. I don't read them all, but I do see them. So I think when we talk about not letting news brainwash you, it is a balance of not necessarily putting your head in the sand and saying, I'm not going to look at anything, but being thoughtful about what you put in your head, that I'm not going to read every single story about what's going on with the Russian investigation. I'm not going to read every single story about the shootings in Chicago, but I do know all these things exist. And I do know that when there is, you know, a weather issue or whatever, I do want to know what's happening, but then basics. And I think Todd gave the best advice. I think The Skim is great. I think that's a great place. That's a great thing to get. And but I was just offering that that's how I usually get my stuff about how what's trending. And so that's would be my suggestion. Oh, and I know the other thing I was going to add to that was when you are getting the weekly news, understand by definition, the news is there to inform us of the things that could threaten our safety. Okay. That's what news is. That's why we have it. The news is not telling us about the people who held a door open for everybody today. They're just not going to tell us that because it's not newsworthy. No one will watch it. No one will listen to it. So you have to remember, you have to find your own ways of finding those stories. One person I would recommend following is one of the women who is speaking at our conference. Her name is Orly Waba. She has a web. She has a Facebook called Life Vest Inside. She has a whole kindness campaign where she goes out and finds all these kind stories and does all these kind things. And those kind of people that I follow supplement my reminders to be optimistic about the world. Is that as much as I'm reading what the New York Times has to offer, I'm also, my Facebook feed is very curated toward the good. I like to follow people who are forces for good. Obviously, that's you know what we're calling our conference. Make sure you have to feed that part of yourself. Don't say, well, if it's not out there and easy to access, then I don't see it. You got to feed it.
I think this is really interesting. Allison, who's on the call, she wrote, as a journalist, I think you guys are a little hard on the media. As someone who has experience working in a newsroom, it's kind of a catch-22. Even when we publish and promote positive news, people still click, read, share the bad stuff.
Agreed. And I 100% agree, Allison, that that's what I mean about it's not newsworthy. Because what our brain does is we click share things that promote fear, and we or that's about sex, fear and sex, right? That's what our brain gets attached to. That's why when we're driving and there's a car accident, there's a gapers block and we all look. But when there's nice people allowing people to merge, nobody's looking. You know, it's not. So I agree with you. And Allison, the media, I know that they're doing their job and that they have to be, they have to, that's the, what their job entails is what's, like I said, what's not keeping us safe or what issues do we have to deal with or what's confronting us. That's their job. So we'll let that be what it is. And I'm talking about news stations that actually give us both sides, you know what I mean? Which is harder to find these days. Any news station that is just telling you to be afraid is not a good place to go. And at the same time, so we let that sit, you know, and then at the same time, we have to be willing to feed ourselves things that are helpful. And it's not about throwing journalism under the bus or journalists under the bus and saying they're all bad. Again, that's a splitting thing. It's that they're doing their job. And then our job is to figure out where we can find the good news. And even though a few of us may choose to show, you know, share the good stories, it's it may not trend the way the other ones share.
Because no, it doesn't.
On our page, we do share the good stories all the time, but they're not necessarily the most popular things on Facebook.
We do these talks like connect with your kids and 20 people show up. And then I'll go to something and it's called keep your kids off drugs. And there's like 95 people in the room. Like the fear
brings people in.
Sadly works. And there's, you know, I've kind of surrendered to this because I've used to say, well, let's title the podcast this or that. And Kathy is always trying to take the high road or the...
Yeah, I won't name a class, keep your kids off drugs or any variation of that, because that's not really, even though that could be an offshoot of it and someone will say, well, why not market it that way? You'll get more people there. But it carries a vibration to me that I don't like. So I would rather say how to connect with your kid. And that feels like me, that feels like us. And that feels like really what the message I'm trying to convey. So it's just a balance.
One other resource, there's a podcast that Kathy told me about. It's called Kind World.
This is great.
It's great because they're like 8 minutes long.
Yeah.
And they're 8 minute stories, well produced, about how one person is doing something really kind towards another person.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Kind World. And it's in your podcast app or your iTunes store.
Yeah. And so it's not so, you know, a long thing you have to listen to. We just got to be willing. There's a lot of people out there trying to offer kind stories and trying to demonstrate good things. Like one of the news shows that I do love, and we tape it, but I very rarely watch it, is CBS This Morning. Sometimes they have wonderful news stories where, but they sometimes have Steve Bannon. You know, it's like there's both. And so we have to kind of choose, pick and choose what, you know, what's helpful to our psyche.
Well, and I wanted to give a gratitude to Allison for, you have an opinion that is very helpful, and it would have been easy for you to just kind of swallow that and say, you know, actually we do these good news stories and nobody. So I'm just grateful that you, made your, that's important to know, because you're right. I remember Brian Williams, I used to listen to watch Brian Williams, and he would always have, you know, the kind, warm-hearted story at the end of the 22 minutes. And there's a reason they put it on at the end. It's because they know that people aren't going to tune in.
They're not going to tune in.
But they're putting it in there.
I know.
You know? So they're trying. So I totally am with you.
Well, yeah, I think anybody in any job is doing their best to do good for the world. And sometimes you end up in a position where to do your job, you have to jump through all these hoops that sometimes can feel negative and manipulative and yucky. Like when I was a therapist, when I was working at the hospital, I guess I am still one, but when I was working at the hospital, the only way that I could keep a kid as my client is if I would diagnose them with all these things and jump through all these insurance hoops to ensure that they would get covered. And I didn't like that. I didn't like labeling this kid before I even understood who he or she was, but I had to do it to make sure that this kid could come see me. And so to, you know, journalists, it's the same thing. It's like their news show will not be on the air unless they get people in to watch, and they know that fear and sex is what brings people in. And do you see what I mean? Like, these are not easy. These are very paradoxical issues. I think that we, though, individually have to take responsibility for what we ingest. And if we're going to ingest a very negative story, then we have to be like, we got to balance it with what's working. What's working? With my college students, one thing I'm having them do this semester is I walk in, and once everybody's seated and everything, the first 3 minutes, they have to write about what's bothering them and dump it out of their head, like a brain dump, kind of like Morning Pages in Julia Cameron's book, The Artist's Way. It's like this whole idea of like dumping. And then after they do that, then they write for 3 minutes about what they're grateful for. You know?
I'm going to go to Jennifer real quick. What do you got?
Hi. This is just a kind of spreading the positive news. I have not been on the Facebook page in a while, and I appreciate the fact that Kathy at our last talk said, don't worry if you can't keep up with everything, because I haven't been able to keep up with that. So I'm not really sure where we are in the tagging for the acts of kindness effort, but I wanted to say that in response to that and the ripple effect of kindness, it is because of you guys that I learned about Orly Wabba. And in learning about her, really fell in love with her and how awesome she is. So I brought information about her to my school district, and I'm a volunteer parent education coordinator. And we've been trying to get a speaker to come in to speak not only to parents, but students. And she was like the perfect person. It was the perfect message that we were looking to start off the school year with. We're calling it kicking off the school year with kindness. And here's a little flyer. I don't know if you can see it. But,
oh my gosh, she's coming. Yay.
Yeah. Yay. So she's actually coming to speak to all of the high school students in our district, all the middle school students in our district, and all of the parents. And that's next week, next Monday. She's coming Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. She'll be here. I know. I'm so excited. And I get to hang out with her too.
Yay.
We're trying to then have this, all these presentations, have every kid in our district, as well as, we're trying for every kid, as well as our community, come together and do a dance for kindness in Morristown, New Jersey. So I signed up as the group leader for our Morristown dance, which is a little bit alarming for me, but going out of my comfort zone to try to do something even bigger than we normally do. So I'll report back and let you know how it goes. But if it wasn't for you guys introducing me to Orly, I would have never known about her. So that's a really big ripple effect, because now she's coming to our community and going to speak to so many people. So wanted to tell you guys that.
Tell her we're excited to have her in March.
Yeah. Tell her we can't wait.
It'll be good.
Yeah, I will.
She's the best. She's really like one of those, you know, and again, it's not like we're friends with her yet, but when we communicate with her, she's just the most like walk the walk kind of person ever. So you're going to have an amazing experience next week. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
All right. That's it.
All right. So we'll send this out. And thank you for your questions, and we'll keep you posted, and we love you and all that good stuff. Todd's doing shadow puppets.
This is the alligator. This is the alligator.
Yes. And
this
you guys have a great, there's no shadow though. Okay. Have a great day, everybody.
This is, nothing.